UK government might have shut down?
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning. I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, Trump Lies Matter. He's ordered an investigation into voter fraud. Yet there are no facts to back up the lie. We'll talk about this whole issue and whether or not this call for an investigation of voter fraud is really about enacting more voter suppression. Also, we have an update surrounding the controversial arrest of a mother and two daughters in Fort Worth, Texas. Their attorneys have new video that they say proves the officer lied about the encounter. We will have that exclusive right here on TV One. The efforts to stall the confirmation of Senator Jeff Sessions as the next U.S. Attorney General appear to be working. We talked to NAACP President Cornell Brooks about the ongoing protest against the Alabama senator. Also, I sit down with columnist and minister Dr. Barbara Reynolds about a new Coretta Scott King memoir she penned, My Life, My Love, My Legacy. Plus, it's What the Hell Thursday, so you know we've got lots of crazy stories to share. They have nothing to do with the White House. It's time to bring the funk. News One Now, TV One.
You have people that are registered who are dead, who are illegals, who are in two states. You have people registered in two states. They're registered in a New York and a New Jersey. They vote twice.
That was President Donald Trump yesterday in an interview with ABC News repeating the widely debunked claim that there was voter fraud in the presidential election that caused him to lose the popular vote. But given the severity of the charge, he announced he would call for a major investigation into alleged voter fraud during the campaign.
So you've launched an investigation.
We're going to launch an investigation to find out. And then the next time, and I will say this, of those votes cast, none of them come to me. None of them come to me. They would all be for the other side. None of them come to me. But when you look at the people that are registered, dead, illegal, and two states, and some cases maybe three states, we have a lot to look into.
Republicans and Democrats yesterday dismissed Trump's call for an investigation.
There's no evidence of that, and I think that those who allege that have to come up with some substantiation of the claim.
Well, let's talk about this.
To undermine the integrity of our voting system is really strange. But in addition to that, on top of it, he wants to investigate something that can clearly be proven to be false, but he resists any investigation of the Russian disruption of our election and any connection to his campaign. All we want is the truth for the American people. I frankly feel very sad about the president making this claim. I felt sorry for him. I even prayed for him. But then I prayed for the United States of America.
All right, folks, let's get right to it with Nicole Austin Hillary, the director and counsel, Brennan Center for Justice. Also on our panel today, Monique Presley, legal analyst and attorney with the Presley firm, Paris Denard, Republican political commentator, Dr. Julian Malvo, president emeritus of Bennett College. So let's get right to it. So Donald Trump continues to speak this lie of this massive voter fraud. There is no evidence. He cites a Pew study, the author of the study from 2008, which is two elections ago, not 2016. Well, the author said, no, what you're saying, I reported, it's not true. So what do you make of this continuous lie that he wants to spread about massive voter fraud, 3 to 5 million votes cast illegally?
It's preposterous, Roland. As you said, and the Brennan Center has shown this, there is really little evidence of voter fraud. What we are concerned about is that this is going to start a massive witch hunt. We know from the past election and from the past several elections that there's been an effort to institute voter suppression in states across the country. The only thing that this kind of investigation will do is continue to stir up efforts to try to suppress the vote. What Mr. Trump Trump should be doing, what he should be using the power of his Department of Justice to do, is to try to make our voting systems in this country stronger, more effective, and more efficient. What we have found is any evidence of anything that even looks like voter fraud really tends to be clerical errors on the part of elections officials across the country. There is no evidence of people going to polls and in person trying to pretend they are somebody that they are not. It is illegal. It is a crime. People can go to jail for it, and it's simply not happening.
Monique, you're working with the largest committee on this issue, also the National Bar Association. When you hear this, when you hear this constant drumbeat, I keep making the argument you can't ignore it because this is a clear attempt to impact policy.
Absolutely. You cannot ignore it. It is shameful. I agree it's preposterous, but it's also dangerous. This is one of those times where we're seeing an administration do a bait and switch. Pay attention to what's going on over here so you don't pay attention to what we're trying to do. So Pelosi's right. We need to be paying attention to the Russian investigation, but we also need to be paying attention to this president because the National Bar Association has found every time they start alleging voter fraud, the next thing we find is policies that make it more difficult for citizens to vote. In this last election, almost half of our electors chose not to vote. And we have a president saying 3 to 5 million people voted who couldn't or would or weren't supposed to be able to.
Paris, the president said to David Mira, I didn't get any of those votes. Shelley, go to my iPad. This is a story from the Washington Post, October 29, 2016. Trump supporter charged with voting twice in Iowa. In that interview with ABC, he also said people are registered in two states. His daughter is registered in two states. His chief strategist, Steve Bannon, is registered in two states. His Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, is registered in two states. Why don't he go talk to his own people if he's concerned? Will he investigate them?
I think the important thing that we're seeing from President Trump is the fact that he wants to get to the bottom of it. This is a president.
No, I asked a question.
And I'm answering your question.
If he said,
I think, Roland, at the end of the day, if the investigation that he launches through the Department of Justice shows that this information is going to benefit the other side, so be it. There are people that are Republicans that may fall in this issue, like you've seen with, you know, alleged from his daughter or from Bannon.
No, it's not alleged. It's proven. It's actual fact that Bannon, Mnuchin, his daughter, Tiffany Trump, are registered in two states. Here's a Trump supporter. This is not alleged. So here's my whole point. The president lied. He said, quote, matter of fact, Shelley, play the soundbite again. This is important. He said, I didn't get any of those votes. Shelley, re-cue that up. So I want to play it again so folks can hear it.
So you've launched an investigation.
We're going to launch an investigation to find out. And then the next time, and I will say this, of those votes cast, none of them come to me. None of them come to me. They would all be for the other side. None of them come to me. But when you look at the people that are registered, dead, illegal, and two states, and some cases maybe three states, we have a lot to look into.
That's a lie. He did get votes of people who tried to vote twice. In fact, also throughout the campaign, Shelley, go to my iPad. This is from Vice News. On Friday, an election judge in Madison County, Illinois, charged with two felony counts of election fraud for allegedly submitting an absentee ballot on behalf of the deceased husband. Audrey Cook, 88, told the St. Louis Post-Dispatch she received the ballots in the mail shortly after her longtime spouse passed away in September. She said he had made it clear he intended to vote for Trump.
And that's what I was saying, Roland, that after this investigation is completed, it may show that it was benefiting, that some of the votes that were taken actually benefited the president. This is why you launch investigations, to get to the truth. And the truth may not be what you want it to be, but it is fact and it is truth. And the earlier...
3 to 5 million? 3 to 5 million? Where's the evidence?
Roland.
That's why we're going to have an investigation to get to the bottom of it.
Paris, if you cite 3 to 5 million, that has to be based on something, not just There it is.
No, Roland, if I say I don't like you, that's not, that I may not have any facts behind
it. You said if I don't like you. But if you say, Roland, I don't like you because you lied up against me 10 times, I'm going to say something 10 times. Where's the evidence of 3 to 5 million? Where is it?
Here's
hold on, Dr. Giuliani. Hold on, hold on. Where is it?
That is what the investigation.
No. You can't, Dr. Giuliani, you can't allege 3 to 5 million illegal votes cast, and you have no evidence to show 3 to 5 million. Then you go, hold up, let me go find the 3 to 5 million, which I cited.
No. It's not going to find the 3 to 5 million. It's going to get to the bottom of the investigation. Because to your point earlier, you said there's no evidence whatsoever of any voter fraud.
And Roland,
actually, the Brennan Center has, no, what they've said is, again, and correct, I'm going to make this correction, then I'm going to go to you. Not that there's none. We're talking about allegation of massive,
right,
unbelievable, overwhelming,
right,
voter fraud.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Exactly. And what we said is any evidence is de minimis. You cannot say that there are millions of voter fraud allegations out there when what we have found in our study, what Pew has found, what academics on both sides of the aisle have found is that whenever there has been an issue with voters at the polls, it has been due to clerical error.
That wasn't clerical error.
Those are aberrations.
And I'm prosecuting.
Those are aberrations.
And they're
prosecuting.
But you do not launch a national investigation based on
two or three
allegations.
That's nuts.
Wait a minute.
You don't do that.
Giuliani.
Here's where he got the number from. Mr. Trump is a high priest of prevarication. He got the number from Hillary's margin of votes in the popular vote.
Precisely.
He pulled that number from Hillary's margin. There is no such thing as 3 to 5. I think you would concur with me that it's less than 0.01%
exactly.
Error, which means that we may be talking, 30,000 votes max.
Let's get to the bottom of it.
And in fact, according to, again, this was an analysis done by the Washington Post. And I'm just saying, I just want you to deal with it. They examined more than 1 billion votes cast. More than 1 billion. How many were so-called illegal?
I believe maybe 0.4%, some very minuscule number.
Is that massive, Paris?
What I'm saying, Roland, is let's have the investigation and put the matter to rest. Because this is the...
What do you mean put to rest?
Because
he keeps lying.
It is
to rest.
No. To Monique's point, she goes, every time we hear this happening, this happens all the time,
Paris,
with Republicans. If the investigation comes out and it says,
Paris,
this is not happening...
Paris, I sat down at the Republican National Committee with Rice Priebus and Sean Spicer, and they sat here and kept talking about, it's voter fraud. I said, and you're going to take an L on this. Every time we hear, voter fraud, we see another voter ID law passed. We see more voter suppression. We saw what happened in North Carolina. Please tell me where Donald Trump has chastised North Carolina Republicans for what a federal court said was a laser-like targeting of black voters. That is voter suppression.
You're not going to see him chastise anybody because what he has done, what he is doing is undermining the strength of our democracy internationally. The more he says voter fraud, the more our democracy, which we go around talking about the strongest in the world, the more we look weak.
Exactly.
And so this is nonsense to spend millions, if not billions of dollars on...
No, we don't.
The country is falling apart, according to our president.
Well, it is.
I mean, that's what he just
said.
It is. So
it
what
is
you're saying...
Oh, my God.
So
it's like Mad Max and a Thunderdome out there.
So what you're
saying...
Have
you seen the roads,
what
the bridges? They're falling apart.
We don't,
hold
but
up.
He wasn't talking
I'm
about
sorry.
Roads and bridges. He was talking about carnage. He was talking about
we'll go to Chicago.
People
that
not
is
having...
Carnage.
Having and the fact that those are real lives and the adapted phrase of our president is carnage and that you, as a representative of the party, are taking that on as the marching orders for what we should call real men and women who have lost their lives to gun violence in the street is unacceptable.
No, I
and
think
what
that
we're
is
finding, I'm not finished. What we're finding is that we have a president who is a narcissist and he is taking his own need to be big when he is small. And he is now using taxpayer funds to justify it. So since we should get to the bottom of things, then we need to get to the bottom of Russia, don't we, Paris?
We should get to the bottom of Chicago. Shouldn't
we, Monique?
Should
we get to the bottom of Russia?
Should we get to the bottom?
Absolutely.
Should we get to the bottom of
absolutely.
Infrastructure?
So
should we get to the bottom of education
so then
reform?
With the Justice
should we get
Department
to the bottom of
did, what the Justice Department just did concerning Chicago is an excellent start because those are taxpayer dollars.
Right.
Do conservatives even care about taxpayer dollars anymore? Now we want to launch investigations based on the president's pipe dream of 3 to 5 million people who voted for somebody else? Then he says none of the votes went to him. Why so? Latinos and women voted for him, didn't they, Paris?
And larger margins than they did for all the Republicans that ran in the past.
Exactly. So then who are the illegals that did not vote for him? If 3 to 5 million people voted who weren't supposed to, aren't those his votes?
Roland, can we get back to the fraud issue?
Go ahead.
Let's get back to the fraud issue. If Mr. Trump really wants to make our democracy stronger, he can use his investigative power, the power of his Department of Justice, to actually figure out how do we make our election system stronger. Dr. Malveaux just said this is about our democracy. He pledged 4 to 5 days ago to uphold the Constitution and keep our democracy strong. Making it stronger means modernizing our voting systems. It means ensuring that we have fair, free, and open elections. Revive and restore the Voting Rights Act. Cut down on these voter suppression laws to make sure that every American, whether they're blue, purple, or yellow, can vote. That would be the best way to use his bully pulpit as president and to use the power of his Department of Justice. That's what we need to be spending our time on. So I would urge Mr. Trump to get away from this witch hunt mentality of focusing on something that we know is not really a problem and to utilize his power to make our democracy stronger. That's what we need to do, whether we're talking about gun violence, the schools, use that power to better our systems, I mean, not to lessen them.
Doesn't he get it? He won. He doesn't seem to get that he won.
No, so, he gets
Can he not be gracious? Can he not be gracious? And basically, he's doing what he said he was going to do about the wall, about other things that we all object to, but this whole...
In fact, Shelley, pull up my iPad. This is from the New York Times. Trump's voter fraud example, a troubled tale with Bernard Langer, of course, he's a golfer. Mm-hmm. Well, this is what Trump said, that he's basing this on, that he heard a story, quote, from the very famous golfer Bernard Langer, whom he described as a friend, according to three staff members who were in the room for the meeting. The witnesses described the story this way. Mr. Langer, a 59-year-old native of Bavaria, Germany, a winner of the Masters twice and more than 100 events on major professional golf tours around the world, was standing in line at a polling place near his home in Florida on Election Day. The president explained, when an official informed Mr. Langer, he would not be able to vote. Ahead of and behind Mr. Langer were voters who did not look as if they should be allowed to vote, Mr. Trump said, according to the staff members. But they were nonetheless permitted to cast provisional ballots. Wait a minute, hold on. It gets better. The president threw out the names of Latin American countries that the voters might have come from. Paris. That's the basis of his argument that some folks should not have voted. They looked like, according to Bernard Langer, they looked like they shouldn't be able to vote. And Trump comes out and throws out only the names of Latin American countries.
That's racial profiling.
Now, you tell me.
Classic racial profiling.
Explain that. That's the basis of his argument, folks vote illegally.
Classic racial profiling.
Haven't read the report, never heard of the report, cannot substantiate it as fact or true. But what I will say, Roland, is what I hope that this investigation
does. Well, there were three people who were in the room.
And coming from the New York Times is not something that I really think is they have not been fair or right or in the reporting of the president.
But hold on.
So I don't know anything about that.
Bernard Langer confirms the story.
I don't know.
And Trump said it. He got it from Bernard Langer, and there were three people in the meeting who heard it.
You asked me about that story, which I have never read or don't know.
Okay.
But I would tell you, what I hope that is at the end of this investigation, we will be able to get to some solutions and address all the things that you
we
raised.
Because we don't need the investigation.
We do, because you need facts.
We know what happened in North Carolina. We know what happened in several other places. We know how people have been turned away from the polls. We know that, for example, when I went to North Carolina, one county had 8 early voting places. And this time, 2016, had one. We know what happened. We know about broken machines.
I'll say this here also, according to the New York Times, the antidote, the aide said, was greeted with silence, and Mr. Trump was prodded to change the subject by Reince Priebus, the White House Chief of Staff, and Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas. That's just one problem, though. Bernard Langer, a German citizen with permanent resident status in the U.S., by law, is barred from voting.
So he
quote,
tried.
He's a citizen of Germany. According to his daughter, he is not a friend of President Trump. I don't know why he would talk about him. that came from Bernard Longer to Donald Trump. Nicole, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much. All right, coming up next on News One Now, we have new information about the Fort Worth, Texas police officer under fire for arresting a mother and two daughters. We also have exclusive video of this officer, what happened after the cameras were turned off. 19 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
If you keep yelling at me, you're going to piss me off, and I'm going to take you to jail.
Okay. You're not. Okay.
Okay. You're under arrest. Get on the ground. Get on the ground now. Get on the ground. You're under arrest. You're going to jail.
You're alive.
Get on the ground now. On the ground now.
That's new video of the controversial arrest of a mother and daughter in Fort Worth, Texas. The body camera footage from last month shows the moments Officer William Martin slammed Jacqueline Craig to the ground and later handcuffing her 19-year-old daughter. The new video also shows the officer using what attorneys say is excessive force against Craig's 15-year-old daughter. The craziest part of the story is that the two women had called police to help them settle an incident. Now, one of Craig's daughters streamed the entire arrest on Facebook Live, which caused the case to go viral. Eventually, the officer arrested Craig and her two teenage daughters. All three were charged and later released. Joining me on FaceTime in Fort Worth, attorney S. Lee Merritt, and along with attorney Jasmine Crockett. Now, what took place after the video was after the camera was turned off? I understand that one of the women was kicked by the officer.
Right. Well, so two things happened. The kick actually occurred during the FaceTime live video. You can see it there. You can see it more clear in this video. But after that camera went off, after Bria Hyman, the 19-year-old, was arrested, the officer took her phone and began to ask her questions, such as her age and her name. When she refused to answer her questions while she was still in handcuffs, he grabbed her arms and began to hyperextend them over her head in a pain submission hold until she would give him the answer. So that's the excessive force in it, that even his own police force found him responsible for. They found him responsible for excessive force. They excused the kicking of the 15-year-old, and they accepted his definition that it was him helping her into the squad car with his foot. But as you look at the video, she's attempting to wiggle into a squad car with her handcuffs behind her back, so she's not moving fast enough for him, so he kicks her into the car.
Jasmine, we also now understand that this officer had another case of excessive force, another complaint.
Absolutely, Roland. We understand that he actually brought out a taser. This isn't the first time. We saw him use a taser in this particular video. He didn't deploy it this time, so at least we know that he's learned enough not to continue to just randomly deploy the taser. But he actually has been in trouble before for deploying a taser on a young African-American male as he was running away from him.
And the guidelines show that under the DOJ guidelines, which Fort Worth has adopted under his own, again, under their own investigation, they said that deploying a taser at a fleeing suspect was an improper use of that taser. Moreover, they said because this officer, in the notes you have, because this officer had been found responsible for using excessive force before, he should be penalized. His captain said he already had a reputation in 2013 of using excessive force, and so he should be penalized. And so now here we are 4 years later, and he's still using excessive force.
Absolutely. And to be clear, this is the first time that he's getting a mark on his jacket, which was the whole reason, in my opinion, that he decided he was going to appeal this decision.
And in fact, had they also said that had he not pursued an appeal, he would have gotten promoted.
Absolutely.
And that's the most concerning thing is Fort Worth Police Department's tendency to sweep these things under the rug. This is a guy who has at least three excessive force usage on the record that this time, if he would have just agreed to the that a mark would go on his jacket, he would have been promoted to corporal.
Last question. How do you hope the release of this video, which was leaked, how do you hope this changes? Because he got a 10-day penalty. That was pretty much it.
Right. Well, The Fort Worth Police Department gave him this 10-day penalty, and they said that he was contrite, and they lied to the general public, and they said he had never been in trouble before. What we see here is him using excessive force in a very dramatic way against a 19-year-old. It's clear for everyone to see at the, I believe, 10-minute mark of that video that is now going viral of his actual body cam. And we see documentation of other investigations of him using excessive force. That is more than enough to fire this officer and to indict this officer by the grand jury. And so we're hoping that there'll be a major public push, a political push, a push from across the board to indict this officer and to make sure that he never polices in this country again.
Absolutely. And Roland, we made 4 demands at the very beginning of this incident, and we are still asking for those 4 demands to be met, which were that the officer be fired, which were that the officer be charged, which were that the charges against our clients be dropped, and that the neighbor, which you can actually hear a little bit of the conversation with the neighbor as it relates to dealing with the child, but we still want this neighbor indicted. He is still walking around, and there is no question, no doubt about the fact that he actually assaulted our client's child, and that is a felony in the state of Texas.
All right. The new documentation reveals that he told Officer Martin that he did, in fact, grab the child by the neck because he refused to pick up litter, and that he attempted to force him to pick up that litter. So that is the admission that they needed to make their original arrest in the first place. So we're hoping for that.
Lee, Jasmine, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Folks, up next on News One Now, the efforts to stall the confirmation of Senator Jeff Sessions as the next U.S. Attorney General is taking shape. Next, we'll talk with NAACP President Cornell Brooks about the ongoing protests against the Alabama senator. Also, could peaceful protests like this become a crime? That's what Republican lawmakers in some states seem to be proposing. The folks who love the Constitution kind of hate it being called the First Amendment. 27 after the hour. News One Now on TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin. Every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
This committee must have enough time to fully consider Senator Sessions' record, to evaluate his answers to our questions, and to determine what kind of attorney general he will be if confirmed. Many, many millions of Americans are deeply concerned about what the future will bring. That's a hallmark of what happened this past Saturday in the march. The least we can do is tell them that we're being as careful as possible in who we place in charge of making these important decisions. For every woman and man who marched over the weekend, we owe it to them.
That's California Senator Dianne Feinstein making her case to stall the confirmation vote on Senator Jeff Sessions to be the next U.S. Attorney General. Although Senator Feinstein credits the Women's March for pushing the vote to next week, the NAACP certainly played a role there as well. Earlier this month, multiple branches held sit-ins and demonstrations around the nation to protest Sessions' nomination to become the next AG. Let's go right to Cornell Brooks. He is president and CEO of the NAACP. Cornell, what's interesting there is Feinstein, her office says she may very well vote for Sessions, saying they've only received some 5,000 calls, on this particular deal here. Do you think any Democrats will have any guts when it comes to opposing Sessions? When you look at his record on civil rights, on voting rights, it's absolutely atrocious.
I hope so, and we plan so. And I would note this. We have several senators whose voicemails have been full for days on end. We know that the Capitol operator has been inundated with calls. We know that our branches, our units all across the country, our partner organizations have been slamming the phone lines. Why then is it that we have an attorney general nominee who has campaign-style commercials running in blue states and red states if they are not worried? They are, in fact, concerned. And the reason they're concerned is because this nominee carries on his back a record that goes back decades. Decades in terms of racially offensive comments, but more importantly, a legislative and prosecutorial record that makes it clear that he's hostile to civil rights. Hostile to civil rights in terms of mouthing the myth of voter fraud while saying nothing about voter suppression in his home state. His one notable example in terms of prosecution of voting rights has everything to do with prosecuting 3 civil rights workers where it took a jury less than 4 hours to find them not guilty, and then a Congress in which he serves gives them congressional gold medals for their civil rights activism. This is an ugly record, and for any Democratic senator, any senator, Republican or Democrat, to vote for this, to sanction this, particularly at this moment in history where we have a president about to issue some kind of an executive order lending credence to the notion of voter fraud while there is rampant voter suppression. We had, as attested to by the federal courts.
Yeah, White House spokesman Sean Spicer actually declare from the podium the stellar, exemplary record of Jeff Sessions when it comes to civil rights. I'm sorry, that's probably somewhere along with Trump's investigators or Obama's birth certificate and the evidence of 3 to 5 million votes. That can't be found anywhere.
It can't be found anywhere, and let us note this. The responsibilities of the Attorney General going back to 1789 have nothing to do with validating, supporting, documenting conspiracy theories. The Chief Law Enforcement Officer of the United States is charged with the responsibility of prosecuting violations of statutes and crimes, not supporting conspiracy theories. And what I mean by that is if you have Jeff Sessions, Senator Sessions, lending support to this notion of voter fraud while denying the reality of voter suppression, while you have federal courts one after another attesting to the fact that voter suppression is real. In the Fourth Circuit, a conservative circuit where I clerked many years ago as a young lawyer, saying that the North Carolina State Legislature engaged in intentional racial discrimination. And in Texas, the Fifth Circuit finding a voter ID law having to violate the Constitution and the Voting Rights Act. The point being here is this Attorney General nominee is categorically, globally unfit to hold the office.
Monique, I want to go to you. Shelley, go to my iPad. This is from The Nation. In 2013, Jeff Sessions, Donald Trump's nominee for AG, cheered the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, calling it, quote, good news for the South. He then said, quote, if you go to Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, people aren't being denied the vote because of the color of their skin, unquote, when the federal court has said North Carolina Republicans had a laser-like focus to limit voting opportunities for black folks. The federal court ruled that.
Right, and that's the important part that I also have heard Dr. Barber discuss plenty of times. When you're talking voter suppression, you're not talking allegations. You're talking facts. You're talking findings by a court of law. That means civil rights organizations and individual citizens have done their job to take it through the court system and have prevailed. And with those findings, we then, Republicans and Democrats, we the country, have to look at voter suppression and do something about it. Jeff Sessions could be a nice guy. They had all those people paraded out there at his confirmation who were talking about when I worked for him, he was really nice to me, and when my son was born, he was the first one to stand at the door. I don't care. I don't mind having lunch with Jeff Sessions. I don't want him to be the Attorney General because his record, not just 30 years ago, but last year, is horrible on civil rights.
Paris, quote, the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, Fourth Circuit, as Cornell said, they, quote, targeted African Americans with almost surgical precision. He said people not denying the right to vote in Georgia. Georgia was found to have illegally purged tens of thousands of voters who were disproportionately people of color. Texas's voter ID law declared discriminatory by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. Why should Jeff Sessions get a pass and be the Attorney General with this horrible record when it comes to voting rights?
I don't think those issues that came up were responsible, Senator Sessions was directly responsible for those things that happened in Georgia. And
quote from Senator Jeff Sessions, quote, Shelley, show my iPad, quote, if you go to Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, people aren't being denied the vote because of the color of their skin. That is a direct, that's a lie.
What I'm saying, Roland, is Senator Sessions, as the senator from Alabama, was not directly responsible for what happened in Georgia and North Carolina.
So did Senator Jeff Sessions?
Let me finish my point. Okay.
So the senators at the confirmation hearing should point out those facts and ask him to respond to them.
They did. And he said he had a great record.
And those commercials,
but he is responsible. He is responsible. Here's how he's responsible. When the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act, the Senate was presented with the opportunity to back the Voting Rights Advancement Act, to fix the act. He, as a senator with a vote, has a responsibility for fixing a problem that is known to exist. Voter suppression, known to exist in his state. How do we know that? We know it because the Justice Department has, over the years, blocked violations of the Voting Rights Act through preclearance, through years before the Shelby decision. After the Shelby decision, we've seen in state after state after state, Justice Roland has lifted up in Georgia, in North Carolina, Texas, over and over again. He has had opportunities day in and day out to fix the Voting Rights Act,
and
he has failed. He has failed. And not only has he failed in terms of voting for a fix, he has denied the existence of the problem. And so we cannot give him a pass on this. We got to be real clear on this. He's responsible as a senator, he's responsible as a former prosecutor, and he is certainly responsible as someone who wants and seeks the job as the chief law enforcement officer of the United States.
And Giuliani, he didn't say anything about the closing of 31 Department of Motor Vehicle offices in Alabama, which had an impact on people being able to get voter ID. Giuliani,
go. He has not been a champion at all of voter access, and that's what we have to look at. Monique, no, I would not have lunch with him, because I don't break bread with folks who have hostility toward my people.
I don't think it's hostility towards our people.
Well, when you deny people access, the basic right to access, to register to vote with the motor vehicles offices and others, when you see what's happened, when the Supreme Court does the Shelby thing, and he basically, that's in his backyard.
Oh, in fact, Shelley, go to my iPad. This is the same piece in The Nation. Quote, Shelby County, Alabama, never had a history of denying the vote, certainly not now, Jeff Sessions said. There is racial discrimination in the country, but I don't think in Shelby County, Alabama, anyone is being denied the right to vote because of the color of their skin. They report, in fact, Shelby County found itself in court after the city of Calera ousted the only black city council member by reducing the percentage of African Americans in his district from 71 to 30%, a textbook example of the type of voting discrimination that the Voting Rights Act was designed to stop.
The sole member, Roland, the sole member of that city council, with masterful gerrymandering, which is what they have excelled in, gerrymandering.
Final comment, Parrish, or do you have one?
Yeah, I do have a final comment. I think we have to be very careful how we characterize people without fact.
And I just laid out facts. I'm quoting the man.
We have to be very careful how we characterize people and their character. But I will just say,
I didn't say character. I am speaking specifically. This is what he said. This is the fact. You laid out in terms of what he could do, what he didn't do. Paris, those are undeniable facts. This is not Kellyanne Conway and alternative facts. These are facts. True or false, yes or no?
And his record is equally poor on the Muslim community and disenfranchisement of gay and lesbian community. Yeah. It's bad across the board, and all of those things affect our people.
I got to get to the story real quick, and that is, since the election of Donald Trump, millions of folks have turned out to the streets to protest his presidency, Republican agenda as well. Now, check this out. The investigative website, TheIntercept.com, is reporting that Republican lawmakers in several states where women's marches took place last weekend are proposing bills that would essentially make non-violent protest a crime. In Minnesota, Washington State, Michigan, and Iowa, laws are being proposed to stiffen penalties for protesters who block traffic. In North Dakota, measures being pushed that would allow motorists not to be penalized for running over protesters if the collision is ruled an accident. In Colorado, a law is being proposed to increase jail time and fines for environmental protesters. In Virginia, lawmakers are pushing to increase the penalty for unlawful assembly after having been lawfully warned to disperse. Joining me on the phone from Minneapolis, civil rights attorney Jordan Kushner. Jordan, this is clear, you have Republican legislatures who want to target the First Amendment. They don't want to see protesters.
I agree. I'll point out that it can be a crime already to engage in nonviolent protest if it's in civil disobedience situations, but they want to make it a more serious crime. They also have bills to make protesters pay for police costs if they get convicted, and to turn the crime of obstruction of legal process from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor or a felony And obstruction of legal process often happen. People get charged with that if they challenge the police or try to record them, and the police get mad and they arrest them, and they want to make it basically impossible or prohibitive to be able to exercise First Amendment rights to challenge the police.
And Jordan, how are folks pushing back against these laws?
There's been a lot of effort, through the media. The media is interested in interviewing both sides, so there's been efforts to try and expose what's going on. But there was also a very large turnout for the bill that was going to make blocking a highway a gross misdemeanor or a felony. A large turnout from Black Lives Matter came, and 12 people spoke out against the bill, apparently very articulately. Only one person spoke in favor of the legislative hearing, but yet the Republican-dominated committee all voted completely for the bill, just ignoring all the arguments. And there was, it did end up being a disruption to the hearing because people were upset that the legislators were not paying any attention to the merits, that they already had their minds made up, that their agenda was to crack down on the protesters and the hostility within the right-wing sectors of Minnesota is clearly directed at Black Lives Matter.
Gotcha. Cornell, real quick, these laws are very similar to what happened in Jim Crow days when folks in the South tried to stop NAACP and others from protesting.
Precisely. And they have currency with respect to this day. Why? Because on the 30th of this month, the Alabama State Conference of the NAACP and I will go to court for our arraignment for criminal trespass. And we sat in the Mobile jail for hours on end. We were fingerprinted, we were booked, and the fact of the matter is we're gonna be subject to fines and perhaps as long as, I believe, 60 days in jail. The point being here is this chilling of the First Amendment is real because we're asking grandparents and grandchildren to stand up for their voting rights and be willing to go to jail. And so, where we have legislators who will make civil disobedience, honoring the tradition of Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King more difficult is somehow, to me, morally inconceivable.
Gotcha. Cornell Brooks, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. I got to go to a break. I'm sorry for that. Jordan Kushner, we appreciate it as well. Thank you so very much. Coming up next, we'll talk with Dr. Barbara Reynolds about her book on Coretta Scott King, a powerful memoir, My Life, My Love, My Legacy, 14 before top of the hour, News 1 Now on TV One.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, numerous books have been written on Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., very few on his wife, Coretta Scott King, who played a huge instrumental role in the Black Freedom Movement. Well, there's a new book out that speaks to this very issue, My Life, My Love, My Legacy, Coretta Scott King, as told to the Reverend Dr. Barbara Reynolds, who joins us right now in studio. Doc, how you doing?
I'm great.
First and foremost, we finally got this book because this was hung up for a while with drama back and forth in courts, correct?
Back and forth with courts, back and forth with the children.
Right.
You have to think about it. If this is your mother, you have a right to say, well, this is not right. I had to deal with that. And, you know, that wasn't so bad, because if that was my mother, I'd want her to be presented properly. But it's here now. I've talked to the siblings, Martin, Dexter, and Bernice King. She looked over my shoulder. She's a lawyer, and so we're here.
Why is this so important? Because so many people have no clue what Coretta Scott King did. They just figured, oh, she was just sort of kind of there standing around at speeches and stuff.
And this is why she says, it's time to see me, because she wanted people to know who she was. She wanted people to know that, for example, of her courage, because when we look at what's happening now, we need courage. But in Montgomery, for example, 1955, her home was bombed and she was in it. Now, Dr. King Sr. came and said, you have to get out of here with the baby. You have to leave. And she said, I won't leave Martin, because I'm not just married to Martin, I'm married to the movement. And that was very difficult for her to say. But in Montgomery, that's when she really knew who she was, that She said she's stronger in a crisis. And to have to part with her, this, you know, this is a love story because she loved Martin and he loved her. But to have to know, because he was trying to liberate black people and do civil rights and human rights, that he had to die. And she knew sooner or later he would have to die. Four days after he was assassinated in Memphis, she went to that very city and led a march with 20,000 people. I mean, this is a woman who had great courage, and her life was in danger all the way to the end. She had death threats on her life. She tried to have a normal life for their children so they would not grow up fearful. So she had much courage. We need this. We need to know about the commitment. I mean, we just say in the line, she built the King Center, and she was the one who was the architect of why we have the King Monument and the holiday. But that was 15 years of hard work, of coming to Congress and lobbying for the King holiday bill. I mean, we have to know that things don't just happen. She had to fight the black preachers who were fighting her because they didn't want to see a woman rise. Remember, in 1963 March on Washington, she could not even speak. She couldn't march. So we have to understand that this, in her period of time, she was a hero then and she's a hero now.
But also, during the Black Freedom Movement, we talk about him giving speeches and that money going back to SCLC. She sang all around the country, and that money from the singing went back into to fund the movement.
Right. She was funding the movement. But when Dr. King died, they want all of the money to come to SCLC and not to her. But that's what she was. She spoke, and I think, you know, while we have Hidden Figures now, it's bringing back to public view what many black women have done. And so it's important that we write books so that people can see what they did. They can't be hit, and she's come back. I know she's smiling down at us because the Sessions situation, you know, there was a letter that she introduced. She sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee, and she said, Jeff Sessions does not have the temperament to be a federal judge. And that was 1985. And how does she know? Because the very district that was filed, right, Marion, Alabama, she was born there. She knew what it was to have to step off the street when white folks came. Jimmy Lee Jackson, he was killed there.
So hold tight. I'm going to go to a break. We come back. I'm going to take your question for Dr. Barbara Reynolds about the book, My Love, My Life, My Love, My Legacy, about Coretta Scott King. Back on News One Now in 60 seconds.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now.
All right, folks, more with Dr. Barbara Reynolds about My Life, My Love, My Legacy, about Coretta Scott King. Julianne, you had a question.
Barbara, you know, one of the things I've always been curious about was Coretta's influence on Dr. King's intellectual development. You see his intellectual development over time, going from just being a race leader to really being a pacifist and a human leader. What was her influence? Because, you know, after the fact, she came out for GBLTQ rights after Dr. King had passed, and she just was always there. So,
well, first of all, she was much a pacifist, and she spoke out against the Vietnam War far way before he did. But she could do this because she was an activist in college. She was in the NAACP in college. Before she met him, she was an activist. And her, she was not, if you read the books that Dr. King wrote, I mean, she was not a theologian, mm-hmm. but she was someone who could take the theories and put them in practice and take the Jesus of the theologians, you know, studies and put it in practice. That's what she did.
Paris.
I think what was amazing when I was at the White House working for George W. Bush, when she passed away, President Bush was going to go, but all of the living presidents said, we want to go to together to show that we are remembering this woman and her legacy. That's a powerful testament to someone who was in the shadows or on the background, but all living presidents showed up to her funeral because of her legacy.
But even though I'm still ticked off that the family did not allow Harry Belafonte to speak because of that, and I was still foul because that man took away.
Well,
anyway,
she
I don't know.
Hold on.
Love
is in here.
Thank you very much. Yeah. So I mean, I ain't forgot that either.
But the thought about the presidents, this is very important because she called on every president.
She did.
And she had a strategy. She didn't go into a room and get a photo op and a selfie. They didn't have that. But anyway, she came with a mission. She had a statement, a strategy. And it was different then because she said, I don't care who's in that White House.
Right.
You have to be accountable to black people and to women and to people of color, to the gay movement, the whole business. That's what she did. And she would be doing that now.
So Democrat
if she
and
was
Republican.
Here. Right.
Yeah.
Democrats and Republicans.
Hold all of them accountable. We're going to do
everybody.
We're going to do a couple of things here. First of all, the book is called My Life, My Love, My Legacy, Coretta Scott King, as told to the Reverend Dr. Barbara Reynolds. We also, of course, have an audio book voiced by Felicia Rashad as well in the book as well. You do want to get that. We're supposed to have What the Hell Thursday. We're going to actually run that tomorrow. I'm also going to do this here. I'm going to go to a break now. We'll come back to close the show out, but then we'll actually run part two of this interview tomorrow, which we'll tape after we get done. I got to be back in 60 seconds.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Birthday shout out. Gospel singer Todd Tribbett turns 41. Kirk Franklin, 47. Anita Baker turns 59. Activist Angela Davis turns 73. Also, shout out to Serena and Venus Williams. Both of them will meet in the finals of the Australian Open. Venus's first Grand Slam final in 8 years. Serena attempted to win an open record 23rd Grand Slam singles title. Wow. Hey, folks, also shout out to the passing of television icon Mary Tyler Moore. I gotta go. See you tomorrow. Holla.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.